Good evening. You're listening to special election coverage on KRBD Ketchikan. My name's Layla Carey, and for the next hour, we'll be talking with candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Assembly. There are three candidates vying for 2 3-year terms on the Assembly. They are incumbents Alan Bailey and Bill Rotecki and former Assembly member John Harrington. This is a call-in show, but before we open up the phone lines, each candidate will have an opportunity to make an opening statement. Let's start with Alan Bailey. Tell us about yourself and why you're running.
Good evening. Appreciate being here. I've had the honor of serving in the last 3 years on the Borough Assembly. I've been a part of and an opportunity to lower taxes, funding of schools, placing public lands into private hands, and that is Ward Cove, finding common ground with the city, which has resulted in a drive-down dock for the commercial industry, for the commercial fishing industry, and Whitman Lake, we were able to provide $2.5 million to sustain lower electrical rates, and that's going to be long beyond our lifetimes, and I think those are good decisions. Hopefully Swan Lake, and I won't take personal credit for these items, but I had the honor and pleasure of being a part of creating solutions to problems, and to me that was what has brought me to this place right now. I really enjoy being a part of solutions, of trying to find those solutions, and I'm looking forward to the next 3 years, whomever is elected, because I think that's we all have that in common. You know, we want to work together when we're working for our community, and that's important to all of us.
Okay, thank you. And Bill Rotecki.
Thanks. Is that? Okay, there we go. Let's see. I guess to just give a little background here, people who know me know me. So people who don't know me, I'll just give a little background. I came to Ketchikan in 1981. I told my friends down south that I was going to go to Ketchikan for a year. It's been a long year, but I'm still here. And then they say, well, my friends from the south say, well, what's Ketchikan like? And I say, Ketchikan is the biggest small town I have ever been in. You know, especially when you think about those mill towns that have they're pretty, not a lot going on. And so I came here, and by golly, it really somehow stuck with me. And so after all these years when Ketchikan has been good to me, I want to give something a little back to the community. Some other things, I'm married with a child and two grandchildren, both of whom were born in the Ketchikan General Hospital. It was called that then. I have a bachelor's degree. I majored in physics. I'm a general contractor. I commercially fished for 18 years. I've been a wilderness guide, and I was an energy auditor, and I've been an energy consultant. I'm currently on the Joint City Borough Cooperative Relations Committee, don't laugh, and currently on the Legislative Liaison Committee, and also don't laugh. Previously been on the Planning Commission. I've previously been on the Borough's Economic Development Committee. I have been a past member of the KRBD Board of Directors, and I was a past chair of the Ketchikan Area States Park Advisory Board. I was looking at my notes from when I ran 3 years ago, and one of the things I said was, I really would like to see us focus on diversifying our economy. Not like that's the only thing I'm interested in, but I think it's very important, and I think we all recognize that diversifying our economy is a very valuable thing. And I think back in, I think it was the mid-80s when there was quite an economic downturn all over the state, and Ketchikan didn't get hit as hard, and I think it was because at that time we were more diverse than many other places. We've lost some of that since then, but that's been it was a goal then, and it's a goal now.
Thank you. And John Harrington.
Well, I'm one of those perennial people that run for elections. Started first in 1986. Arrived in 1985. Ran for the school board in 1986. Was elected in 1988. Again in 1991. Was appointed twice more to the school board. We served on the Consolidation Committee. I served on as chair of the North Tonga Service Area Board for 5 years. Was elected to the Borough Assembly twice, in which I, during that period of time, I served on the Planning Liaison Economic Development Committee, in which we focused primarily on economic development issues. During that time, we had quite a number of conversations with the community leaders and regarding various ideas to promote economics within this community. I won't go through all of them because there were a whole lot of them. And some of them got through, some of them didn't. Since after the 6 years on the Borough Assembly, I was appointed to the Planning Commission, was elected to the school board, quit after a partial year, continued to serve on the Economic Development Committee until such time as that committee was dissolved. As soon as the committee was dissolved, the borough manager asked permission of the borough assembly for me to continue working with the staff on economic development issues. And since that time, I've been bringing reports generally to the borough assembly on economic development issues and on planning issues. I am running again this time because I have those ideas. I have things I want to push. I have the economic development stuff that I just think is important in this community. We have a group of young professionals in this town who cannot find affordable, appropriate housing. We lose them to the lower 48. That is a disaster for the future of Ketchikan. So one of the initiatives that that I've been talking with the Borough Assembly about is an initiative to get some affordable housing developed on borough land. Another initiative that we've been talking with the Borough Assembly about is a connection with the Prince of Wales Island. And this, in the current economics of our region, what's good for the Prince of Wales is good for Ketchikan, and what we can do to promote their diversity helps us. And so we've made some initial ventures into that. We had a conversation at Southeast Conference with 16 members of the Prince of Wales community. I'll be giving a report to the Borough Assembly at their next meeting on that. Anyway, fingers are in the pot, and I just want to keep stirring.
Thank you very much. And this is a call-in show, so if you have questions for your assembly candidates, please call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Now, school funding is an annual issue and often leads to some level of bickering between the assembly and school board. What are your thoughts on this topic and how to improve the relationship between the two elected bodies? And this time we'll start with Mr. Rotecki.
I'm a strong supporter of schools and education, and alas, we don't have endless funds. So I think in my position, I've pretty consistently advocated for funding the schools as much as we possibly can. We have a constraint, though, which is, you know, we have a budget, we have so much taxes, and so that's always the balance. I don't relish the conflict. And I think some of the conflict can be reduced considerably. And I think it begins with more conversations that ultimately end in more trust. And, you know, if you have two parties that don't really trust each other, then it's just tough to really get over that. So there are times when it looks like the combined school board, borough assembly committee is just sort of struggling dealing with each other, but I think that is a good step to try to make that one work better. As far as eliminating the conflict, I don't think it's going to happen. You know, there always will be that. And part of the thing, I don't know that that's what's happening here, is that the people who care the most about the schools are the people who have kids in the schools or who have in my case, I don't have any kids. I never have had any kids, and I'm not going to have any kids, but I see it as so important to the social welfare of our community. For one thing, it's a way to lift some people out of a background that's been harsh or underprivileged, mm-hmm. And the other thing is, as an employer, it's essential to have educated people. You know, I'm a carpenter, so people that can't understand fractions would have a tough time working for me. So I'm a strong supporter of schools. You know, the real issue is the conflict. Can we eliminate that? The budget arguments will go on forever.
Thank you. And next is Mr. Harrington.
yes, the nature of the beast is going to be conflict, at least until some of the rules get changed. Clearly, the biggest thing that could be solved is if the state would step forward and take care of funding all of basic education. That 2.65 mil is an impediment to funding them to the height of which I think all of us want to fund schools. Education is obviously the most important thing our community does. I'm an educator, spent time as a teacher, director of special education, administrator, consultant assistant, coordinator of adult education. My background is education. That is what I value, and I think it is essential that we fund the schools appropriately. Conflict is going to be there.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bailey?
I have a different perspective and a different life experience. My career has been, as many may know, has been working in the correctional center. I was the superintendent here for over 20 years and special assistant to the commissioner of corrections, which we handled the entire state and dealt with policy issues. And all that being said is I am familiar with when education doesn't work or when those individuals don't have or take the advantage of acquiring an education for whatever reason, may it be family support, there's many different reasons why some individuals may not have that opportunity that that other families may have when you are really supportive through their education. So I have a different perspective, and to me, the old cliche, and I don't take this lightly, but pay me now or pay me later. And the cost of these individuals is tremendous of their life's experiences, what they're able to do or not do, what they're able to have an opportunity for, and it's based on the education. So I keep that in mind every time that I go to vote on education. I believe that we need to find a common ground. We need to find a middle road wherever we can. We only have so many dollars, and that part's the truth. The school board is responsible to advocate for the best budget they can, and for me, that's the right thing. That's what they should be doing, and they do so strongly, and they do so with passion because there are teachers here that are incredible. My sons grew up here, and they benefited from the education here in Ketchikan. They went on to college, and I'm very proud of both of them. They're both in the criminal justice system, and I'm proud of that as well. But all that being said, is they had the chance to do these things because of what was provided to them and what they earned here in this community. So when it comes to education, the thing that I'm not interested in from the beginning is there's an assumption that increased taxes immediately solves the problem. I don't believe that is correct. I think we need to be more innovative in the sense of finding ways to work collaboratively together. Such as an example is if there's an opportunity to share maintenance costs, those kinds of things. We should be doing so. We should look at ways that we could work together to try to reduce the cost of operational budgets. Then thereafter, just take a look at our budget. With regards to the education of funding, I have a slightly different take on the prospect of it, whether or not we are to potentially file a lawsuit against the state. I think there's unexpected repercussions with that, and I think we need to be walking those waters very carefully before we ever head in that direction, and I'm just saying so with caution. I think we have to find ways to work together, and I choose not to view the conflicts that are often stated regarding the school board and the borough assembly as fighting or infighting or conflicts. It is trying to find a reasonable solution, and we're not necessarily going to agree, but certainly let us walk away from the table with some respect of each other's jobs and responsibilities, and that's what I absolutely believe in.
Okay, thank you very much. And on a similar topic, this question was submitted by a listener. And if you were a member of the school board, and at least one of you has been, rather than the assembly, what would you change about how local schools are operated? And Mr. Harrington, you are first this time.
Two different levels of question, how they're operated on in the, is based on the classroom and or on how they're operated based on the administrative structure and what goes on there. I'm not going to speak to the second one. I'll speak to the first one. And that is, I met with the Native community on an economic development issues earlier in the summer. And one of the issues that came up was an emphasis on preparation for workforce. And the thing that they were stressing as they bringing this out as an economic development issue was the need for our students to be coming out of the classroom with more of a work ethic, with the expectation that they can come to work or to school on time every time, that they have a commitment to developing those sets of workforce preparation skills. And I jokingly talked to the Borough Assembly afterwards that said, you know, that was something I worked on 20 years ago. And I expect we will be working on that, as the mayor said, in another 20. But that doesn't mean that that's not something that we need to be dealing with every year. That is making sure the students leaving the classrooms we have here are prepared for the work and prepared to have a good work ethic. Second item, I think, has to do with some technology. We have a strong activities program, and we have kids leaving while I'm traveling a lot. There's got to be some way by which we can be making sure that they can attend classes electronically while they're out, that they can be, instead of being absent because they're on a trip, they can be present but off-site. And I think with some investment in some of the technology, I think we could do that, which would solve that problem of the loss of those kids and what they're missing when they're not at school. Just a couple of things that came up in our conversations this summer.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Rotecki.
If I were on the school board, and I think this actually would take whole community support to do something like this, what I would like to see is I very much agree with the taking advantage of new technology. That's one little element, but a larger element might be looking at how we teach. I mean, arguably, we're teaching the same way we were 200 years ago. And that said, we've learned a tremendous amount, and maybe even especially in the last 20 years. I mean, I studied education, I guess it was 40 years ago. Can you not hear me? Am I not close enough? Sorry. Should I start over?
You shifted your head, so it didn't.
Okay. I was good until I shifted my head. Sorry about that. Anyway, I studied education and I taught, and that was, I guess, probably 45 years ago. And we thought we were being innovative at the time, but I don't think that we were nearly as knowledgeable as people are today. I don't know if folks have heard about the Khan Academy, which kind of turns upside down the way you approach teaching, or if you've, you know, read anything about the analysis of the success rate of teachers. There's teachers that teach more than twice as much in the same year as other teachers. And that's not how we hire. That's not how we fire. You know, we don't really evaluate their capabilities. The subject that Mr. Harrington brought up of socialization is very difficult because often it appears that that is the thing that we're doing when we're teaching or we're socializing people to behave properly. But we don't really address that as a topic, and we don't evaluate it. We don't have scores on that, you know, other than, so if I were more than on the school board, if I were on the school board and I got my way, I think that we as a community should be looking very hard at some of these other opportunities that we have. And interestingly, very often they are money savers. It's easy to get seduced by a numerical test. And I can laugh at that because I had no problem with that when I was going to school. I mean, I did. It was easy for me and other people. But those numerical tests are a very poor way to evaluate, I believe. You know, the just brought up topic of being able to show up on work on time, that didn't show up. And I always like to tell people about the head of the Department of Education in the state of California, who had a doctorate or more than one in education. When he made the choice that they were going to no longer use SAT scores for entrance in the California college system, university system, his reasoning was, you know what? I have an auto mechanic who does my cars, and this man is a genius, and he's a failure at tests. So to look forward, and I hope, you know, whether this were to happen in a year or 10 years, I hope we're always looking forward to make improvements on how we evaluate our successes. And the real proof of the pudding is the kids and how they come out, whether they can show up at work on time, whether they end up with fulfilling jobs. And another test is whether they stay here in Ketchikan.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bailey.
I guess I would come with some slight bias in the sense of if I were on the school board, that I'm going to make an assumption that not everyone's going to Yale or Harvard. And with that, I understand, too, that there's federal grants and federal funding that requires when that stops, there is a need to go and acquire additional funding at some point from somewhere. So that certainly has to be kept in mind, not just the upfront cost, but the cost in the back. To me, it's about finding opportunities for skill building. The classes that they have now, or some classes they have, is they have welding. There's commercial fishing, where they actually take the young men and women out, or the boys and girls out, and give them a chance to work on a boat. There's culinary arts. But we have an opportunity, and Juneau does a pretty good job with that, where the college is involved, and they allow for training for mining. We have industries that are coming to our area in a period of time within our future, be it the Niblack Mine or Bokan Mountain Mine. And we also have the shipyard here that is really wanting to hire local people any and every opportunity they get. As a school board member, I would certainly want to find ways that we could be inclusive to point individuals in that direction and give them some opportunity for training that would make a lot of sense for local, very good paying jobs. I would absolutely be meeting with the teachers to find solutions. Those are the ones who are in the trenches. I would not make an assumption that I'm walking in through a door and that I'm going to solve this problem or this issue. I think you have to talk with the people who are in the trenches and find out what is their solution. How would they go about resolving this? I think it's a conversation that needs to happen, and I would like to see that if I had an opportunity to change anything, it's about working together, and that has to do with communicating and making sure that we're effectively communicating our needs and wants and desires so that there's no question as to what the community can offer, and that being the, to me, it's the skilled labored force that really is well-paying jobs. And for those young individuals who are gifted or at least work very hard at their grades and, you know, the opportunities will arise for them to attend colleges. But I don't think the push should completely be everyone has to go to college. I just don't believe that that's makes a lot of sense.
Okay, thank you very much. And I would, before we move on to the next topic, would like to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show. If you have questions for your assembly candidates, please call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And we were speaking earlier of improving relationships with the school board. Let's move on to the other local government. The borough and city governments are going through yet another series of public disputes. What's the solution for that ongoing contentious relationship? And this time we will start with Mr. Rotecki.
My, oh, my. Well, am I close enough? I am on the Cooperative Relations Committee, as is Mr. Bailey. And I think, first of all, I want to take a step back to give people a little bit of my point of view, which is both managers have been saddled with and readily accepted a task, which is they're trying to manage the budget for each of those governments, and they're trying to do their best to make sure that, you know, their budget is as sound as it can be. And so I think a lot of the conflict has been set up and has nothing to do with the personalities. Now, you know, of course, personalities have also their implications, but and my feeling is that as was said at the last at the last Cooperative Relations Committee, think about these incredibly talented, educated, high-paid people who are spending a lot of their time in these confrontations. They're not always confrontations, but strong disagreements that doesn't do anything at all for the general public. I mean, you might live in the city, and you're also a member. You're also living in the borough, or you might live in the borough and use all these facilities of the city. And so, I think that because we have a circumstance where both managers are going to continue to, you know, fight for their budget, the conflict in greater or lesser degrees is going to continue on unless we decide that we should have some kind of single government. The point's been made, well, it's happened, I think someone said, 5 times in different forms, and most recently was the borough government doing something, and before that it was the city government doing something. But I think, and I think a good point's been made, too, is that it would probably be better if it originated with the citizens than with either government. But there are other ways to do it. You know, it could be a joint petition of both governments. So I'm giving my pitch for the public to consider and think whether they want to force the governments to consider some form of combining the two governments, wherein there were no more services added to the borough. The borough was still that way, and the city had whatever services they currently have. I know a lot of people are just thinking, you're nuts, this could never happen. But I think these disagreements point out the benefits of doing that. I would want to point out, too, that if it were done, it wouldn't stop the conflicts, because what you'd have, I mean, it would change the nature of the conflict. You'd have different departments that are fighting for their own budget, but you'd have a case where there was someone who could tell them no. Right now, the borough government can't tell a city no. The city government can't tell a borough no. You know, you have, there's no mother or father looking down on us to tell us that we have to behave. And so I'm just, you know, putting out a pitch for there being a single government for those two entities.
I don't think you actually said the word consolidation.
Well, I don't know what the word is.
You know, I think that's what you're talking
about.
But
I bet Mr. Harrington does. And if he wants to weigh in, you know, there's consolidation, there's unification. And I think there are other forms of combining governments. But if it were to happen, it would only work if whoever did it tried to learn from previous mistakes, learn why people were opposed, and see if there's a solution. And, you know, if we don't do that, there's no point in it.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Bailey.
As was stated, I'm on the Cooperative Relations Committee. In fact, I've chaired that Cooperative Relations Committee for the last 2 of the 3 years. And I can say that without question, I believe in the Cooperative Relations Committee. I believe what the purpose and the intent of that is to do is to have the two governments work together as best they can. There will always be disagreements, and a lot of that is aired in public, and unfortunately, sometimes those debates and discussions get pretty heated. However, I would like to bring in focus of the things that have been accomplished as a result of the Cooperative Relations Committee, and that is such as a drive-down dock for the commercial fishermen. I've had commercial fishing folks come to me and say they have no expectation that in their lifetime they would ever see that. And my question was, why not? You know, why is this insurmountable? Bottom line is we were able to continue to work with the city and to find that solution. And that's what I thought was reasonable, and we did so. And so in the next whatever the construction period of time is and all of that happens, we will in fact see a drive down dock. Whitman Lake's another one. It's an incredible opportunity for us through the Cooperative Relations Committee, and it is also through a lot of the Assembly and through the Council working together on that aspect, which will have, and be, as I said earlier, beyond our lifetimes, that opportunity to actually make an effect upon our community. Power is the basis to which industries come to a community, one among other issues, but that is a predominant issue. You have to have affordable power to be able to perform the businesses that are being expected to come here. It's small thing, but I look at those small things, the carts on the docks. God bless those carts, because you know when I'm hauling up, my hundreds of pounds of fish, and anybody knows my fishing knows that I'm probably exaggerating on that one, but it helps people, and that's a good idea, and that's what we should be doing. So when we talk about conflict, a lot of that is, again, trying to find the solutions to the problems, and there will be disagreements because both managers have a responsibility to that prospective entity. They take their job seriously, and frankly, I've stated to both of them that I would rather have a passionate person that believed in what they were saying and doing than simply to acquiesce and simply say, well, okay, we'll figure it out, and then not solve the problem. So both of these men are committed to their task, and I simply choose to view this as strong-willed persons who have purpose and need to make sure that they balance their budgets as we would our checkbooks. It's necessary to balance the checkbooks, so you have to make decisions. And as I said, I've had the opportunity and been very fortunate to chair the Cooperative Relations Committee, and I choose to look at the things that we've been able to accomplish, and I hope that committee continues to do the good work and best it can to have these two entities work together. When we talk to the city council folks, there isn't one of them that I can't look in the eyes. I could work with every one of them. There isn't, they're without question. And I hope that they feel the same about me as well. I believe in that committee. I believe it's the right thing. And simply stated, I choose to look at try to find the solutions and not dwell on the conflict. I'll let the press do that.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Harrington.
Boy, we sort of skirted the issue that you were alluding to in the beginning and dealt with the generalities of having, and yes, consolidation. I mean, obviously, that was a major passion of mine for a couple of years. And one of those regrets of my past political involvement that it fell flat on its face at the last end of it. I thought we had a pretty good project, and I thought we did a pretty good job. And it would have solved a lot of these problems. I think the issues of the library, of the emergency 911 calls, I think you can point out in each one of those, there are failures on the part of our respective bodies. But as I look forward to what's the next one going to be, my concern is we all value a hospital. We all value the need for improving the hospital. But you know what? I don't know that the borough has been talked to yet about how much they're contributing to the bond issue for the hospital. Some of these things need to happen going into them. And if there is an expectation that the borough should be contributing, we need that sort of dealt with ahead of time. Instead of pointing out the failures of the last, let's look at the positive ways, things we can learn from what's gone on recently and make those forward steps now. If we continue with the government the way it is, and obviously the track record for consolidation is abysmal, I expect it'll be that way for at least another 5 or 10 years anyway. Even if we get the push started, it'll take several years to get completed. So we're going to have to look toward ways of solving the problems that are facing us and make sure that all of us who value life and government and the way our way of life here in Ketchikan, we need to all get along and do so in a very productive and positive way.
Thank you very much. And we do have somebody on the phone. At least I hope he's still there. Mike from Ketchikan, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, please go ahead with your question.
Question for all three. If the city council came to the borough assembly and asked you to push consolidation along with them, would you do it? And if so, how?
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. And we will start this time with Mr. Harrington.
If I were on the borough assembly and the city came and said, let's talk consolidation, I'd be right there with them. Let's do it.
Short answer. And Mr. Bailey.
Oh, that's not an easy question. Thank you, Mike, for the question. That's not an easy one. I am all for, bottom line, I'm all for less politicians. We've got enough politicians. We've got too many. Here it is. I'm shooting myself in the foot saying politicians should listen more and speak less. But in this instance, I believe that we would be better served by a single entity. However, my concerns are much what was expressed previously was that the borough ends up getting stuck with incredible tax raises and without service. And to that end, that would be a dead end for me. And so that would be difficult. However, I would absolutely try to work with the city to try to find ways that we could collectively determine how can we make this work. Rather than the question, yes or no, do you want to have consolidation or not? The question really should be, for me, how is it we could make this work? What conditions would exist? What parameters would exist to allow for this to actually be successful? And those are the questions that need to be asked. So I think that's the direction that I would want to go, is to find those questions first, and that would be in a public forum. And the public would have everything to say about that, as they have the last 5 times. So I am for a single government, but I think the question should be such that we try to find the solutions. I continue to talk about solutions, but this is exactly how I feel and what I believe. We need to talk about this and find out how we can best serve our community. And I would hope that I hope that answers your question, Mike.
Thank you. And Mr. Rotecki.
Yes, I would definitely be open to discussing the topic with the city. I'd like to add what I tried to say earlier, too, which is without sufficient input from the community, it's probably not going to work. It has to have good input from all parties, you know, the two governments and the citizens, for it to have a chance. And then, of course, it always goes to the vote of the public. How it's structured changes that vote a little bit, I believe. But one thing that's been a big concern of non-city residents. One thing that's a big concern of non-city residents is the concern that even all things being equal, if you get the same services that you have now, that your taxes will go up. Well, I believe I've seen 2 studies that showed that's not true. No, your portion would not go up. And in fact, I believe that at least one of those indicated that in equity, the city residents' taxes may go up. So That being said, that's got to be part of the whole process. That has to be very carefully looked at and calculated so that people see, oh, is this true, is it not true? And it would be part of the process for people to know what they're going into rather than sound bites and, I'm sorry, a bunch of bumper stickers that are not based on fact. So the other thing that I want to point out about it is that it does not have to be structured so that any services can be forced on someone. It doesn't have to be structured that way. It could be left exactly the way it is. I mean, one example was if there is a borough and then there is a basically a service area, which is the city, and that service area runs all these services within the city. So this is all theory, right? But you don't get past the theory if you don't get together and talk. And that talk would be, no doubt, as Mr. Harrington pointed out, protracted and difficult. But I think if you don't try, you never succeed.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I would like to remind everybody this is a call-in show. If you have questions for your assembly candidates, please call 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. We have about 20 minutes left in this forum. And my next question is, what about funding for library operations? That's been one of the topics of debate recently. What is your solution to that argument? And this time we're going to start with Mr. Bailey.
Well, we've certainly had that discussion in the Cooperative Relations Committee, and bottom line is where I stand was that the library isn't going anywhere. The library is here. The library is an incredible facility, be it the design and the structure. Anybody that's been in the library, it's absolutely beautiful. Having all of the arguments that have been presented regarding persons outside of the city not being able to vote, and which did not allow them an opportunity for input to there. All that being said, it's a facility that is a community resource. It is an incredible community resource. I am opposed to reducing one dime from the borough assembly. At this time, unless someone can bring forward other facts, I believe we have a responsibility because borough residents do participate. They do use that. I think there is some concern with regards to counting heads and how that would operate. And then the purpose of that is really for what? Is it to reduce the budget? Is it to increase the budget? What is the purpose of counting heads? And I think that is protracted into an incredible debate. The bottom line is we are currently paying for that library, the borough assembly. It's $400,000+. I don't know. It's $400,000+. We're paying for that. And personally, me speaking by for myself, I don't see that should be changing at all. We have a responsibility and you know, to make sure that all the residents are cared for. It's all, both the cities and the borough as well. So does that mean then that if we continue or that we choose to start reducing the budget on that we're going to impose upon the city, borough resident who are within the city limits to what, increase their taxes to cut those or to take care of those shortfalls? Or is that going to mean that by reducing our investment, and that's what I refer to it as, reducing that investment to that to that resource, that now those who are working in that library now have to dedicate themselves to other issues, counting heads. And I'm not sure that I'm sold into that at all. I think there has to be another way of looking at this. And I am absolutely for funding the library. That's where I stand.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Harrington.
I don't think anybody at this point is talking about not funding operations. And speaking as someone who owns six pieces of property, three in the city and three in the outside the city in the borough, I'm going to pay my fair share no matter how it's spread out. But let's back up for a second. I don't think, as I say, we were talking about the operations budget. It's the capital budget, the increase for the capital expenditure for this new building. I think this has become the pivotal point in all of this conversation. And again, we've talked about fairness. We've talked about all of that. And I alluded to it in a previous conversation. These conversations should have taken place before the building was built. These conversations should have taken place at the time the bond issue went out. Then that's when everybody's interest is up. That's when the excitement of a new building, that's when all of this, people in both bodies are focused on it. That's when this decision of what is the rural share of the capital expenditure going to be and how is that funded. That didn't happen. That's an unfortunate thing because now it's not a matter of fairness. It's a matter of politics. And politics gets in the way of clear thinking and clear processing of what goes on. If you do it ahead of time, all the cards are on the table. You can talk clearly and plainly about what should happen. But once it's off the and once it's into politics, then you get the positions, you get the manipulations of the data, you get the objections to various suggestions, and that causes the breakdown. We could have solved this so much better had we taken a time just a couple of years ago. But as I say, I'm going to pay my fair share no matter what because I've got. No matter how they cut the pie, I'm going to get cut out someplace and cut in someplace else. So.
Thank you. And Mr. Rotecki.
I guess, in full disclosure, I was very much opposed to the library at the site it got built. And so I take great exception to the idea that the borough was a part of that process. No, it was driven by the city and for the city's, you know, needs. But I see that as really irrelevant. It's been built. Here we have a facility that's alluded to be, it's a fantastic place. Not only is it a fantastic building, but the usage of it demonstrates its value. The usage has grown and grown, and that really demonstrates it. And I know in the past, I don't know how many years ago, this Ketchikan had like some of the highest usage per capita of the library in the state. And if that was before this growth, I don't know what it is now, but it's probably pretty darn good. And we should be darned proud of that, and we should be willing to pay for it. But, you know, John suggested a solution that we should have had. Which I agree with. The way I look at it is, wait a minute, okay, the city's short money, and so they come up with another idea that, well, you should also pay for the bond. I think. I have never been in favor of any cutting of the library's budget, but if there's a request for an increased contribution from non-city residents, I think there should be some explanation and justification. The bond's irrelevant. You know, your operating costs should have included that to begin with. And if they didn't, then let's, you know, get together and talk about it. I don't know. I don't have any great, solution to this. I do think it's a fair question to say how do you justify the increase in cost? I think that's a fair question. I think, unfortunately, it turned sour, and, you know, however that happened is out of my control. A point, again, is if this were, a unified government, it would be a non-issue. It just would be it wouldn't have ever come up.
Thank you. And both of you went slightly off topic and went into the debt issue, which the paying the bond debt issue, which was my next question, and Mr. Bailey didn't get a chance to address that one. So
can you repeat your first question? I'm sorry, I missed that.
I was asking about operating budget, but
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Sorry.
That's fine. And so, if Mr. Bailey wanted to address the bond debt issue as well before we move on,
bottom line is this: we are now dealing with history. This has been passed. This has been brought forth. It has been approved. There is all of the planning that has occurred, and the end result is that it is now a debt. It is here for us to resolve and how we are going to pay that. We are a community, and we should be working together towards finding the end result, which is paying that off. And to the best that we can, I think the borough does have responsibility, and I think, again, I've talked about that the managers are dedicated to serving the interest of both the borough and the city, and that there is a need for information to justify that. And I see no reason why we can't find a way to find that solution. However, if the city is unable to provide that information, then I think it's incumbent upon the borough, because we're the ones that are requesting that, that we should have the opportunity to help find a solution to providing that information, so then we can be of some assistance to help pay for that debt. And I believe that's a community responsibility. All of the planning and all of these things have already occurred. That part's over. The building's there. That has occurred. It is a community, not just a city. It is a community resource for our entire island. I've had the chance to talk with the librarian, and as Mr. Rotecki indicated, it's increasing. People are coming in there and sitting down and reading newspapers and bringing their children and reading stories to them, and it's increasing. And I think, again, that is a community, it's a community asset, and the borough should be finding a way to try to help the city in eliminating or at least helping them with that debt.
Okay, thank you very much. And we have a little less than 10 minutes left, so if anybody wants to call in with their questions, the time is now. The phone number is 225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Now, another, moving on with the relationships issue here, another relationship that has caused some angst is between the borough and the state regarding funding of schools. So as well as the grievance access issue and reduced funding in general for projects, is there anything that you, as an assembly member, could do to encourage more sympathy from state officials for local needs? And we'll start with Mr. Bailey.
Oh, you got a good question here. I am with the belief that it is likely going to be a political solution, not a solution that will be resolved by a lawsuit. That is where I'm at right now, and I think the issue of how we can influence that is having a strong representative that brings forth our desire, our needs to describe the problem. The interesting part is that is neither Anchorage, Wasilla, Fairbanks, or Mat-Su are interested in pursuing this lawsuit. The cases, there have been only three cases in the history of Alaska, Supreme Court cases, that have been overturned. Actually, two, because one was prior to to us becoming statehood. But regardless, for us to bring forth this education funding through a lawsuit, we have to prevail on overturning two cases that have been determined. One's out of Kenai, one's out of Wasilla. One is weaker than the other, but all that being said, that's a big hill to climb. I think it is truly the need for a strong political statement, for us to stay united, for us to keep this on the board, for us to continue discussing this and continue bringing forth our arguments to convey to those other cities, why it's in their best interest. Anchorage, Fairbanks, and all of these community schools are in big trouble. That's without a debate. In the future, they're going to be in much worse trouble. And our Prince of Wales groups, they are in big trouble with the lack of the funding that's coming through, be it through rural schools or through PELT. The issue is that we have to we really have to find a way to influence the legislature. And right now, without question, there is no interest at all. And this is going to take time. Conversely, if we were to file a lawsuit, and it's been conservatively estimated, I mean, we can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. The end result is not known. And we can go on for years with this particular lawsuit. And to the end result of what? You know, we simply, for what? Because it all has to then go back to the legislature regardless. And that doesn't mean because we get a favorable, if we were to get a favorable ruling, I would question that. But if we were, that doesn't mean that they're going to reach a favorable ruling to the amount of money that we believe or that we need to our complete funding of our schools. So it's a complicated issue. I have studied it well, and there's a lot of aspects to it, and it is really complicated. But I believe at this point right now, it's going to take a long period of time to resolve this issue, and I have concerns of whether or not a lawsuit is the best direction to go.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Rotecki.
Did you end your question with how do we get more sympathy from the state?
Correct.
Yeah. That's good of you.
Well, to me, that's a pretty simple question, which is it just takes a lot of work communicating our point of view and doing it well. And yet, you know, we're small potatoes, but of course the good news was just recently it was pointed out that our population, and I believe it was the economy also, are growing the fastest of the state. So, you know, that's quite a turnaround from a few years ago. But it's 10 years before the next census. Well, no, only 7 left before the next census. You know, I think we have our political clout, although it's been diminished, I believe it was a rather good idea of Senator Stedman to look at putting together coastal consortium, and that could be a large enough block, even though they're all small communities that don't have a lot of votes. The block could be large enough that it could actually have quite a bit of clout. That means working with your neighbors. I think that is our best solution for having more power in Juneau. I mean, going up and pounding your fist, I don't think is a great thing, but going up frequently, well prepared, with your arguments and your point of view, is well rewarded. That time that's spent there, I guess that's a pretty short answer to a very complicated question. I think the other points have been brought up as far as what's the likelihood of success. People should know if there's a lawsuit, if the lawsuit were to prevail, what the solution is going to be is that the courts will send it to the legislature, and the legislature will come up with a solution. So it still would be an unknown if it were to prevail.
Okay, thank you. And Mr. Harrington.
I did like the way you ended that question, too. I think the way to develop sympathy is to point out the pain. And clearly, in the conversations I had last week, the pain is there within the small communities. Communities that have established first-class cities are required to pay that 2.65 mil equivalent. And with the expected eventual demise of the secure rural schools, with the expected demise of the payment in lieu of taxes from the federal government, and with the state cutting back on the community revenue sharing. All of the sources of the small communities, their money that they rely on, they're all drying up. And the burden of educational funding is building within those communities. So it's vital not only to Ketchikan, but to all of the outlying areas that we get together, that we begin to spread that story of the pain that is being felt by the smaller communities and by us. I mean, what we could do with that extra 2.65 mils is extraordinary as far as funding education. But having said that, I think it's still going to be important that we align ourselves with the Bush caucus and with getting some of the small communities involved. The other bigger items that we've lost out on, well, those we'll have to deal with by ourselves. But I think the one comment, one of the communities, Heidelberg, is now in our legislative district. And they're facing a rather an unusual problem of, before being part of Prince of Wales Island, generally, they were part of that whole conversation within the island, and they were all represented by the same legislator. Now they're in a position where they're stuck with Ketchikan and Wrangell and Annette Island, and they're feeling a little bit out of the loop. And I think that's one of the things that I will be bringing to the Borough Assembly at the next meeting, is the need for us to be meeting with them specifically to make sure that they're included in our concerns as we approach our next legislator. I'll shut up at that point.
Thank you. And we do have a caller on the line, Deborah, who lives outside of city limits. Deborah, are you still there?
Yes.
Please go ahead with your question.
Okay. Let's see. Just had a question about, getting support from the people and backing from the people on various things. I think it would be very helpful if, just with the small things like quarterly, we all get all the residents, you know, the property owners and such get bills of the sludge fee, the outwater fall fee, the road fee, the, you know, whatever, boat fees, and many of us own all of those things and have those things, and we get one bill on one piece of paper, and I must get five or six every quarter. And if my house is getting that, that means the people next door are getting that, and the people next door, and that's 46 cents a pop. So, I mean, this is very small. We're talking about pennies, but we're in hard times. We are in very hard times, and we just keep getting, there's another need. There's another need. And, yeah, these are real needs. But what about being good stewards over the cents, you know, the 46 cents six times in a row? I get them over two or three days, envelope after envelope from the borough with these bills. And happy to pay them, but why can't it be in one envelope on one sheet of paper? And you know, we're talking about man hours. Somebody stuffing those envelopes at the borough office. You know, these are all dollars. And I just wonder if that could be remedied, and if you would get more support from the people if in the small ways you were being, and I'm saying you as if you work in that office, but the borough would be more responsible with just the small things, and that being one of them. That's just a suggestion and somewhat of an irritation, as you might be able to hear.
Thank you very much, Deborah. And Mr. Rotecki, do you have a response?
I have one response. I believe that the assessor's office has taken great strides in the last year to reduce, they cut their budget for the mail-outs by, I think, over half. And I sort of have a question, too, in my mind, is what about electronic also? Is that something that will be an option in the future? But I'm all in favor of it, and I would bet you an even dollar that the borough manager is listening. Whether or not he responds to this is a question, although we can certainly bring it to him. But I don't have any problem with that at all. I do remember when I moved to Ketchikan, all of the city bills were together telephone, electric, you know, they were all one bill. And then the city thought it was great when they separated it. I thought it was a lousy idea.
Okay. And Mr. Harrington?
What a delightful question. Yes, I think she's got some great ideas. I too, have been frustrated. My frustration was with the city, actually, and then I asked them, since I own some rental properties and I get all of those things, I get several bills every month, and I thought, you know, can I get one printout? Nope, it's not possible. And at this point, I the same thought should have gone through my head regarding the borough. You're right, with the North Tonga service area, their $100 fee and their taxes, and the $15 a month, $45 a quarter sledge fee. There should be a way we can do this more, appropriately and with less expense to us.
Okay, and Mr. Bailey.
Well, I don't mean to make light of this because her point is exactly right. I don't know if J.P. Morgan or one of those folks with a few more dollars than I said a nickel here, nickel there, and next thing you know, you got $1 million. So it is the small things that do count. It is the small things that make the difference. And if it can be done, it should, wherever we can, to reduce this redundancy or confusion. Oftentimes I see the bills and I'm going, what is this? And have to reread it several times to figure out what it is I owe this time. Of course, I always pay my bills. So I thank Deborah for bringing that question forward because I do believe it is the small things that do make the difference, and you have to set the example. And thank you very much.
Thank you. And we are pretty much at the close of our call-in forum, so I'll let you each have a closing statement. What message would you like to leave with tonight's listeners? And we will start with Mr. Harrington.
Get out and vote. I think most people know all three of us. We each know each other. I think we can safely say all of us are friends. However this election turns out, that friendship will remain, and just make sure you get out and vote.
Thank you. And Mr. Rotecki?
I don't know how this ended up on my desk, but this is actually from the Alaska Constitution. All political power is inherent in the people. All government originates with the people, is founded on their will only, and is instituted solely for the good of the people as a whole. That's in your Constitution.
Thank you. And Mr. Bailey?
Well, all being said, I have a great respect for the two gentlemen that are sitting on the opposite side of the microphones here. It is an honor to be a part of public service. I have been honored by that. I appreciate it. I know these gentlemen on the side of me over here, they believe in the same thing. And we are here to serve our public and to give back to our public. And I certainly believe that I have tried my hardest to do the best job I can when it's, and I speak this from the heart. I say it's an issue of trust. When somebody votes for you, it's an important, to me, that's an important bond where they're saying, you know, we're trusting you to do the right job, to do the right, you know, to make the right decisions, to do the study that's required of you, and to put your best foot forward and to represent our community the best you can. And I take that very seriously. And as a veteran, it is incredibly important for me that people step forward and vote for the candidate of their choice. And I think you have three good candidates here. I hope that you will find that I am worthy of continuing on with the work of this community as I truly enjoy it. And again, I've said numbers of times, it's about finding solutions. Not to just fester and to dwell on the problems in itself, but trying to get past this and let us try to find the solutions because it benefits us all.
Thank you very much. And that's all for tonight's Borough Assembly Candidate Forum. I'd like to thank each of the candidates for participating in tonight's program and to those of you who listened and called in. We have the third and final call-in forum Thursday evening featuring candidates for Ketchikan City Council. And have a great night.